And so today, as I was praying, or not today, this week, this last couple of weeks, as I've been praying about this sermon and praying about tonight, I just kept coming back to the Israelites in the wilderness. Right? I just kept coming back to this picture of the Israelites in the wilderness. And so I really leaned in to looking at that and praying about it and asking the Lord what he wanted to reveal to us tonight and what he wanted me to share through his spirit. And so tonight the message is called The Purpose of the Wilderness. The Purpose of the Wilderness. A lot of us have gone through wilderness seasons and desert seasons and dry seasons. And if you haven't been in one of those, you will be. it will come. It will come. And for reasons that I'm going to just continue to present is that the wilderness is a vital part of God's plan for us. It's a vital part of God's story for our lives and what he is working in us. The wilderness is a key part of that, and we don't get to skip over it. We would like to skip over it. I would love to skip over those moments when I feel like I am walking in the desert. I would love to skip them, but it is part of God's plan for my life, and it's part of God's plan for your life, both as individuals, as a family, and as a corporate body of believers. It is part of his plan. And so the first thing that I want to say is that the wilderness season isn't a punishment. It's not a punishment. And we have this tendency to consider the time in the wilderness and the time in the desert as a punishment from God. As I have messed up, and now I am in this place, and I've got to figure out what I did wrong so I can get out of it. It's not a punishment. Because let's think about the Israelites. And let's go to Exodus 13. Okay. I'm not going to start reading yet, but when I do, it's going to start in verse 17. Okay. Let's think about the Israelites. They're in Egypt. They're slaves in Egypt. They're crying out for deliverance. How many of you have seen The Prince of Egypt? Right, the movie, right? And they're all singing, and it's like going up to the Lord, right? And it's like this beautiful song, right? And so they're crying out for deliverance. And God sends them a deliverer in the person of Moses. And then we know this story. There's plagues. And they're saying, let my people go. And Pharaoh's going, yeah, I'll let you go. And then he backtracks on it. And another plague comes. And the power of God is revealed in very dramatic, drastic ways. Coming to the end that we celebrate in Passover, where the Israelites have this Passover dinner and they put the blood on the door pieces, right? And the angel of death passes over them. And all the other firstborns that are not protected by this blood of the lamb die. Not just people, but cattle, livestock. Okay, everything that is firstborn is touched by this angel of death unless they're covered by the blood of the lamb. And then Pharaoh goes, you can go. And where does God lead them? To the wilderness. Was that a punishment? No. It was part of his sovereign plan to release them from bondage. Okay, so let's start in Exodus 13, verse 17. I'm in the New King James Version. Then it came to pass, when Pharaoh had let the people go, that God did not lead them by way of the land of the Philistines, although that was near. For God said, lest perhaps the people change their minds when they see war and return to Egypt. So God led the people around by way of the wilderness of the Red Sea, and the children of Israel went up in orderly ranks out of the land of Egypt. So we see here in the verses that God led into the wilderness out of kindness. There was another way that they could have gone, but God looked at that way and he said, if they go this way, they're going to shrink back. They're going to see something, they're going to get scared, and they're going to run back into bondage. So I'm going to take them this other path. It was the kindness of the Lord that took them into the wilderness. It was the goodness of God. He tenderly led them into the wilderness, full of wisdom, full of love, omniscient God, sovereignly led his beloved people, the apple of his eye, into the desert. I don't like that thought. I don't like the idea that going into this wild, dry place is God's kindness to me. Is God's love for me? Is God's sovereign plan for my life? Yeah. It doesn't sit well with me, but it's the truth. It's the truth. So we see here that the first purpose of the wilderness was that it was an invitation. It was an invitation from God. It was an invitation from God for encounter. Okay, we see that in the verses that follow. I'm going to read in verse 19. And Moses took the bones of Joseph with him, for he had placed the children of Israel under solemn oath, saying, God will surely visit you, and you shall carry my bones from here with you. So they took their journey from Succoth and camped in Etham at the edge of the wilderness. And the Lord went before them by day in a pillar of cloud to lead the way, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light, so as to go by day and night. He did not take away the pillar of cloud by day or the pillar of fire by night from before the people. The wilderness was an invitation to encounter the Lord in a way that they had never witnessed before and they would never witness again. Wilderness is an invitation to encounter. It's an invitation. It's also an invitation to deliverance. Okay, Exodus 14. I'm going to kind of skip a little bit through this, but this is the Red Sea. So they're in the desert. They're crossing. They're going. They come up on the shore of the Red Sea, right? At this point, Pharaoh's like, oh, I done messed up. I'm going to go get them back, right? So he goes and he chases them down, okay? And let's hear chapter 14, verse 10. And when Pharaoh drew near, the children of Israel lifted their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them. So they were very afraid, and the children of Israel cried out to the Lord. Then they said to Moses, because there were no graves in Egypt, have you taken us away to die in the wilderness? Why have you so dealt with us to bring us up out of Egypt? Is this not the word that we told you in Egypt, saying, let us alone that we may serve the Egyptians? For it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than that we should die in the wilderness. And Moses said to the people, do not be afraid. Stand still and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will accomplish for you today. For the Egyptians whom you see today, you shall see again no more forever. The Lord will fight for you, and you shall hold your peace. And the Lord said to Moses, why do you cry to me? Tell the children of Israel to go forward, but lift up your rod and stretch out your hand over the sea and divide it. And the children of Israel shall go on dry ground through the midst of the sea. And I indeed will harden the hearts of the Egyptians, and they shall follow them. So I will gain honor over Pharaoh and over all his army, his chariots and his horsemen. Then the Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord, when I have gained honor for myself over Pharaoh, his chariots and his horsemen. And the angel of God who went before the camp of Israel moved and went behind them, and the pillar of cloud went from before them and stood behind them. So it came between the camp of the Egyptians and the camp of the Israel. Thus it was a cloud and darkness to the one, and it gave light by night to the other. Let me just pause there. He's standing between them and their enemies, and he is a terror of darkness to the enemies. And he is a sustaining light to his people. What an amazing picture. What an amazing picture. He is terrible darkness and life-giving light, sustaining light. He's the same thing, both extremes at one time. He's darkness and light all at the same time. God is amazing. I love this. Okay. So that one did not come near the other all that night. Verse 21. Then Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the Lord caused the sea to go back by a strong east wind all that night and made the sea into dry land, and the waters were divided. So the children of Israel went into the midst of the sea on the dry ground, and the waters were a wall to them on their right hand and on their left. And the Egyptians pursued and went after them into the midst of the sea, all Pharaoh's horses, his chariots, and his horsemen. Now it came to pass in the morning watch that the Lord looked down upon the army of the Egyptians through the pillar of fire and cloud. And he troubled the army of the Egyptians. And he took off their chariot wheels so that they drove them with difficulty. And the Egyptians said, "Let us flee from the face of Israel, for the Lord fights for them against the Egyptians." Then the Lord said to Moses, "Stretch out your hand over the sea that the waters may come back upon the Egyptians, on their chariots and on their horsemen." And Moses stretched out his hand over the sea. And when the morning appeared, the sea returned to its full depth while the Egyptians were fleeing into it. So the Lord overthrew the Egyptians in the midst of the sea. Then the waters returned and covered the chariots, the horsemen, and all the army of Pharaoh that came into the sea after them. Not so much as one of them remained, but the children of Israel had walked on dry land in the midst of the sea, and the waters were a wall to them on their right hand and on their left. So the Lord saved Israel that day out of the hand of the Egyptians, and Israel saw the Egyptians dead on the seashore. Thus Israel saw the great work which the Lord had done in Egypt. So the people feared the Lord and believed the Lord and his servant Moses. So the wilderness is also an invitation to deliverance. It's an invitation to salvation, right? It's not just an invitation to meet with the Lord and to see him, but it's an invitation to see him work dramatically on your behalf. To see him work dramatically on your behalf to save you, to deliver you, to protect you. And the wilderness is also an invitation to provision. An invitation to provision. And we know these stories. Chapter 15, verse 22. Verse 22. So Moses brought Israel from the Red Sea. Then they went out into the wilderness of Shur. And they went 3 days in the wilderness and found no water. Now when they came to Marah, they could not drink the waters of Marah, for they were bitter. Therefore the name of it was called Marah. And the people complained against Moses, saying, "What shall we drink?" So he cried out to the Lord, and the Lord showed him a tree. When he cast it into the waters were made sweet. There he made a statute and an ordinance for them, and there he tested them and said, "If you diligently heed the voice of the Lord your God and do what is right in his sight, give ear to his commandments and keep all his statutes, I will put none of the diseases upon you, which I have brought on the Egyptians, for I am the Lord who heals you." Then they came to Elim, where there were 12 wells of water, and 70 palm trees. So they camped there by the waters. So the Lord provides water for them by transforming the spring that's too bitter and poisonous to them. He makes it sweet. And that not only does he transform this water, he then leads them to an oasis, right? And then also in chapter 16, and they journeyed from Elim, this is verse 1, and all the congregation of the children of Israel came to the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after they had departed from the land of Egypt. Then the whole congregation of the children of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. And the children of Israel said to them, "Oh, that we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the pots of meat and when we ate bread to the full. For you have brought us out into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger." I'm going to come back to this foolishness later. Okay, we're just going to skate by it for the moment, but we're coming back to this. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a certain quota every day, that I may test them, whether they will walk in my law or not. And it shall be on the sixth day that they shall prepare what they bring in, and it shall be twice as much as they gather daily." I'm going to skip down to verse 13. So it was that quail came up at evening and covered the camp, And in the morning, the dew lay all around the camp. And when the layer of dew lifted, there on the surface of the wilderness was a small round substance, as fine as frost on the ground. So when the children of Israel saw it, they said to one another, "What is it?" For they did not know what it was. And Moses said to them, "This is the bread which the Lord has given you to eat." So the wilderness was an invitation to provision. Provision from the hands of the Lord. Because they're going to a land of milk and honey, right? Which is a provision from the Lord. But when they step into that land, God stops giving them manna, right? And now they have to gather. They have to work in that land. And though it's an abundant land, though it's a fruitful and fertile land, they still now go back to what we would, how we think that you provide for yourself. They're doing fields, they're sowing, they're planting, they're reaping and harvesting, okay? But this whole time in the wilderness, they're sustained supernaturally by the Lord. Supernaturally. Water from rocks, manna on the ground every day. It talks about how over the whole period of time that their shoes never wear out and their clothes never wear out. They're sustained supernaturally in the wilderness. So in that passage, we see how the wilderness is an invitation from the Lord for us to encounter him, for him to deliver us, and for him to provide for us. That's not a punishment. The point of the wilderness was that it was a place of transition. It was a place of transition. They had to go through it to get from Egypt to Canaan. They had to go through this. It was a place of transition. And when we despise the season of the wilderness, we are despising the work of the Lord in our life. We are despising him taking us from glory to glory. Okay, we are despising the natural and supernatural process and seasons of the Lord. The wilderness was also a place of revelation. We already touched on this when we talk about the pillar of cloud and the pillar of fire. But all through the story of Exodus, you see the Lord revealing himself in a multitude of ways, giving them new names to call him by. And they come to the mountain of Sinai, where the Lord says, "All of you, consecrate yourself and come and meet with me." He's calling his people to come and meet with him so that he can reveal himself to them. The point was never for Moses to be the only one to see God face to face. He called them all to the mountain. And then they got scared. But the purpose of the wilderness was for it to be a place of revelation from God. So the wilderness was for invitation. It was for transition. It was for revelation. It wasn't supposed to be a punishment. But then, Israel made choices that prolonged their season in the wilderness. The fact that they went into the wilderness wasn't an issue. The fact that they stayed in the wilderness was the problem. Okay? So us going into the wilderness isn't the problem, right? It's part of God's plan for our lives, okay? But the goal is to be in the wilderness for the sovereign amount of time that we're supposed to be in the wilderness. Not to keep walking in circles for 40 years, okay? Israel would have gone into the wilderness regardless. Okay, so the fact that they went into the wilderness is not the problem. The fact that we go into the wilderness is not the problem. The Bible says that we go from glory to glory to glory. In the Psalms, it talks about going from strength to strength to strength. In Psalm 1, it says, he shall be like a tree planted by the rivers of water that brings forth its fruit in its season. Some versions say fruit in every season. Okay? So those promises, glory to glory to glory, strength to strength to strength, fruitfulness, are not somehow abandoned when we're in the wilderness. We still get to go from glory to glory to glory. We still get to go from strength to strength to strength. We still get to be fruitful in the wilderness. None of those things are gone. None of those things are limited. God is not limited by where we are. He is not limited by where we are. And that promise of glory, that promise of strength, that promise of fruitfulness, that promise of abundance is still true in the desert. It just looks different. It just looks different. In the desert, so let's use an example. In the desert, provision looked like manna, looked like waking up every morning. And I mean, we live in Rochester, so we all know, you know, the frost when it touches the ground and it's all in the grass and the tops are white, 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 and then the sun comes out and it melts away. That's what manna looked like. It says it right there. It looked like the frost on the ground. So just like you wake up when it starts to get cold and everything is dusted over and you just see it touching the tops of everything, that's what the manna would look like. They would wake up, they'd come out of their tent, and it would just be there. And there was more than enough for all of them to gather what was needed for their household. And there was more than enough that before the Sabbath day, they could gather double. Okay, and we know it was supernatural because it wasn't obeying the laws of nature. That's what supernatural means, above nature. So on Monday, if they got twice as much as they needed and tried to save it till Tuesday, the next morning there was maggots. Okay, so you'd think, oh, it's one of those things that spoils really fast. But on Friday, when they gather twice as much as they need, on Saturday morning, it was still fine. That's not how food works. Okay, that's not how food works. Things that spoil fast, things that can like hang out on the counter, can hang out on the counter. It doesn't change based on the day of the week. Okay, how long my food lasts doesn't change based on the day of the week. Okay, so we know it was supernatural. Right? So that's how God provided for them in the wilderness. How did he provide for them when they went into the promised land? By giving them fertile land. By blessing their seed. By blessing the work of their hands. Okay, it was still provision, but it looked completely different. So abundance looks different in the wilderness than it does when you're in the promised land. It looks completely different. What does glory, strength, and fruitfulness look like in the wilderness? It looks like deep roots. It looks like deep roots. It looks like roots that are sinking down, sinking into the depths of the ground until it finds the water that's running underneath the surface. It looks like roots that are thick, that no matter how dry the surface seems, the plant is still nourished. Cactuses don't die in the desert. They're green. They're green because they've reached down. They have a root system that other plants don't have. I can't transplant anything from my backyard into the desert and expect it to survive. Right? I can't. But things grow even in the desert. Things grow even in the dry places. And you can grow even in the desert. And your spirit can be strong even in the dry places. And it's all about sustaining roots that are deep into the presence of the Lord. Sustaining roots that are deep into the power and the life of God. Roots that go down deep. Because if the roots are deep, it doesn't matter what's happening on the surface. It doesn't matter how dry it is. It doesn't matter how much the wind blows. It doesn't matter how dry the soil looks. Because it's down below where it's still receiving nourishment. I have some really persistent weeds in my yard. And it's like, no matter how many times I cut them back, they're back. Everything's dead and they're flourishing. They're just growing, just budding, doing stuff, propagating, sowing more weed seeds, just living life, right? And so I've realized when I go to get them out, it always shocks me. They can look really flimsy on the surface. But then when I start going down, it's this tenacious, thick root that has burrowed deep into the ground, down deep. I am surprised sometimes by how deep I'm like doing the little tool around and like going down and trying to find it because I'm like, I don't want this thing to come back again. So I don't want to snap it. I want it to be gone. And I am like tearing up my yard, trying to get down to the bottom of it. And it's thick for longer than I think it should be. And it is burrowed underneath the soil, right? I want that tenaciousness in my spirit. I want that tenaciousness in my spirit that no matter what tries to take me out, I have this thick root that has extended with multiple tendrils down, 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 down into the soil. That no matter what it looks like on the surface, no matter how many times I get mowed down, no matter how little rain there is, no matter how little sunlight there is or how cold it is, there is a kernel that cannot be destroyed. That the moment there's a little bit of water, that there's a little bit of sunlight, suddenly I burst forth into full bloom again. That's the way I want my life to be. And that's what fruitfulness looks like in the desert. It looks like deep roots in God. There's a verse in Song of Songs. I'm going to flip to it so that I have it. It's in chapter 8, or Song of Solomon. And it's 8:5. It's the first part of it. It says, "Who is this coming up from the wilderness, leaning upon her beloved?" That's the core of what it means to have deep roots. Leaning upon her beloved, the Lord. What does it look like to lean on someone? You're resting all your weight on them. You're trusting them to carry you. You're trusting them to hold you up. If you're really leaning on someone, you're not trying to keep your weight back, right? You're just leaning on them. You're fully committed to them. For high school, I went to School of the Arts. I was a dance major. And so we would do a lot of partner work, a lot of lifting, a lot of different stuff. And so sometimes I was the person being lifted and sometimes I was the person lifting other people, right? And it didn't work if the person who was being lifted was fighting you. It did not work. If they did not trust you, or when I was the one being lifted, if I did not trust my partner, we were going down and someone was going to get hurt, okay? For it to work, I had to fully commit to the process. So if I was the base, I had to fully commit to taking their weight. I had to fully commit to planting myself and to holding them. If I was the one being lifted, I had to completely trust them. My job was to stay in position and to let them move me wherever they needed to move me, or however they needed to move me. If I had my own decisions about where I was gonna go, we were going down. If I didn't trust them to manipulate my body and to take me where I needed to go, we were going down. If we weren't both fully committed, we were going down. The Lord is fully committed to us. His commitment is never in question. He is fully strong enough to bear our weight. He fully knows where we're supposed to go. He fully knows the steps it takes to get us there. The question is, are we fully committed to him and trusting the process that he's leading us to? Or are we keeping some of our weight back? Are we pulling? I have four kids. And so, I mean, my youngest is six now, but anybody who's ever had a toddler, oh, seven now, oh, sorry, people are putting their hands up. Woo! His birthday was on Thursday. My youngest is now 7 years old. 7 years old. He sunk down there. I don't know if he even noticed. All right. As his head pops up. Okay, so my youngest is 7. But anyone who's ever had a toddler or whoever has ever babysat a toddler or who has ever taken a toddler someplace that they were reluctant to go, you know how hard it is to be walking hand in hand and then the thing on your hand just goes into dead weight? Right? Like you're walking and they just... And now you're just hauling them right behind you. Okay? How many times are we doing that to the Lord? He's got us by the hand. He's confidently leading us wherever it goes. And then we're like, wait. And we just kind of crumple in the path. We're not going to get where we need to go. Yeah, he could drag us. But he frequently chooses not to. I mean, there's a few times when the Lord has straight up dragged me into where I needed to be, okay? But frequently, he is asking me to partner with him and walk with him and trust him. Coming up out of the wilderness, leaning upon our beloved. That's what fruitfulness looks like in the desert. So what prolongs our wilderness seasons? I'm going to go back to that spot where I said I was going to go back to. What is that? Exodus 16. Where I said I was coming back to this foolishness. We're going back there now. Exodus 16:1. And they journeyed from Elim, and all the congregation of the children of Israel came to the wilderness of Shin, which is between Elim and Sinai. So they're between the place of rest and the place of encounter. Okay, because Elim was the place with the 12 wells of water and the 70 palm trees that they just camped at. And Sinai is where God's going to rest on the mountain and call them to consecrate themselves and meet with him face to face. So they're in between those two places. On the 15th day of the second month after they departed from the land of Egypt. This is crucial. They've been in the wilderness for a month because they left on the 15th day of the first month. They've been in the wilderness for a month. Then the whole congregation of the children of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. This isn't the first time they're complaining either. Okay, this is just the one we're highlighting. And the children of Israel said to them, "Oh, that we had died by the hands of the Lord in the land of Egypt when we sat by the pots of meat and we ate bread to the full. For you have brought us out into the wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger." It's been a month. They had packed provisions before they left. So it seems like at this point, the provisions are probably getting thin or running out. They are not starving yet. They are hungry. They are not starving. Okay? No one has died. No one has died. They've been in the wilderness for a month, and they are catastrophizing. They are starting to get hungry. They are starting to realize they don't know how long this process is going to be. They're starting to realize, oh, wait, we don't have enough. Okay. And they flip out. So one of the things that prolongs our time in the wilderness is complaining, murmuring, and resentment. Complaining, murmuring, and resentment. They are extrapolating an end that doesn't even make sense. At this point, they're like, God, we ran out of water. God gave them water. God, we're tired. He brings them to a place of rest. God, the Egyptians are about to kill us. God gets the Egyptians. Okay? So there's a pattern here. They realize something's about to run out, or something awful is about to happen, and God provides or God supernaturally delivers. For whatever reason, they have decided that this isn't going to be true this time. They are going to run out of food and they are going to die. There is no, hey God, do you have a plan for this? It doesn't really seem like we have enough food. Like, you've already done the water out of the rock. You're here with fire. You're here with a cloud. What amazing and miraculous thing are you going to do? No, it's not that. It is, you have led us into the wilderness to kill us. And you don't even have the decency to let us die by the spear. You're going to starve us to death. They directly attack the goodness and the kindness of the Lord. For literally no reason. They have just come through a multitude of plagues where God's hand has sovereignly protected them. They have just seen the Lord part the Red Sea for them to walk across and then flood it over their enemies. They have just seen God throw like a tree into some spring of water and it turned from poison into something sweet. They have just seen God supernaturally lead them to an oasis in the middle of the desert that they had no idea where it was. They didn't have a map. And they didn't have GPS. And they've rested. And then on the back of all that, they go, ooh, we're having to tighten up the rations a little bit. You must intend to kill us. Foolishness. Okay, and then the Lord promises to rain food down. And Moses said, at evening you shall know that the Lord, this is verse 6. At evening you shall know that the Lord has brought you out of the land of Egypt. And in the morning you shall see the glory of the Lord, for he hears your complaints against the Lord. But what are we that you complain against us? Also Moses said, this shall be seen when the Lord gives you meat to eat in the evening and in the morning bread to the full. For the Lord hears your complaints which you make against him. And what are we? Your complaints are not against us, but against the Lord. Because they're attacking Moses. And Moses goes, you're not talking trash about me. You're talking about God. Like, I hope you realize this. You're accusing me, but actually you're accusing God. Do you understand what's happening here? Right? He points this out to them. He points out to them the nature of their unjust accusations and, in fact, who they're actually accusing. And so, excuse me. This led me into a really interesting kind of circle this week, this idea of resentment. I preached on bitterness a while back, right? And I talked about unforgiveness, resentment, and bitterness. I spent most of the time on bitterness, but I talked about the kind of different levels, right? And resentment, I said, was unforgiveness with anger, right? And then bitterness was calcified unforgiveness or resentment. And by calcified, I meant hardened, right? It can happen in a moment, but it's hardened like concrete sets. That's what bitterness is. You have unforgiveness or you have resentment and it's hardened in your heart, okay? So resentment is not just unforgiveness, it's unforgiveness and anger. And I went on this interesting journey with the Lord this week because I realized, so a lot of times when we have unforgiveness, I say unforgiveness is like holding a debt against someone, whether it's an actual debt or a perceived debt. So someone could have actually done me wrong and owe me something, and I have unforgiveness. Or I could think that they did me wrong, regardless of whether they actually did or not, and have unforgiveness. Okay, both of those can happen. But I was realizing with resentment that yes, there are those times when someone actually does you wrong and you're angry about it, and so you're resenting them. But I was realizing that far more pervasive in our lives is a resentment that's rooted in something that's not even real. We're angry about something that's not even the truth. And so we see this in these Israelites. They go, we could have been in Egypt. Where is that? Verse 3. When we sat by the pots of meat and when we ate bread to the full. What were they in Egypt? Slaves. Regardless of how much food there was or wasn't, they were slaves. They were in bondage. The anger that they were feeling to the Lord, was rooted in a lack of reality. They were romanticizing bondage. Okay? Romanticizing bondage. And how many times are we complaining and murmuring and feeling resentment about something that isn't even true? Okay, we do a lot of counseling. This isn't about anyone specific. You'd be amazed about how many times this comes up. So if I've said this to you, I am not calling you out, okay? All right, just saying that because I don't know who I've said what to, and I don't want anyone to think that I'm telling your business, okay? So many times we hear in parenting or in marriage stuff, like if only they did this, or if only they hadn't done this thing, then everything would be the way it was, and it would be better. And I've known a lot of people for a really long time. Okay, I've lived in Rochester since I was 3 years old. Okay, I've grown up with a lot of people. I've done life, and this is, I mean, it's such a blessing to have done Christian life with people for decades. Okay, I'll be 40 this year, right? I've been a Christian since I was 8. I've been like recommitted and hardcore with the Lord since I was 14 going on 15, okay? So it's been 25 years this month, right? And so there's people who I've known since the week I rededicated myself to the Lord that I am still doing Christian life with now. One of those people being my husband, okay, who we have done life in ministry together for 25 years, okay? So there's plenty of people who I've known, and so I've known them. I know their life. I know their siblings. I know their parents. I know who they married if they're married. I've known their kids since the day they came out of the womb, right? And they'll go, we would have been in this place. And I'm like, what are you talking about? When was that true? Right, like full love for them. But they're like, well, this is a fictionalized example. If my husband hadn't done this and he would just lead the home like he used to. And I'm like, he was the spiritual leader of your home? When was that? When was that? Right? And they're saying that he or she, you know, it goes both ways, right? He or she or their kids screwed up something that never actually existed. They're like, if they hadn't done this, we would be in paradise. And I'm like, you realize you've never actually been in paradise, right? You were never actually in the promised land. I don't know what you were thinking of, but that wasn't it. Right? Like, this just brought junk to the surface, right? But the junk was always, you know you were in bondage, right? This just showed you the chains. And you're romanticizing this thing, and you're holding resentment against someone for something that's not even real. For something that's not even true. You're like the Israelites in the desert going, if we were in Egypt, we'd be eating meat and fish. If you were in Egypt, you would have been making bricks with no straw. Like, let's be real. Let's tell the truth. Okay? And so a lot of times when we're feeling that unforgiveness and when we're feeling that resentment, we actually need to ask the Lord to open our eyes. We need to get in fellowship with our other Christian community and go, Is what I'm remembering actually true? Because if you have real friends, they'll tell you. Real friends will go, no, that last job was trash. I appreciate that it gave you a paycheck, but no, your boss was mean and rude and abusive. Do not romanticize it. Do not go, oh, if only I hadn't left, right? No, it was bad. It was wrong. It was the provision of the Lord to take you out of that place, right? Okay? When God exposes the chains, it's for your good. When he shows you the bondage, it's for your good. Even though frequently it hurts us to see that there was a chain, to see that there was a bondage, to see that there was a shackle, okay? To see that what we thought was good wasn't really that good, okay? What we thought was amazing wasn't really amazing at all, okay? So that's my sidebar. If you find your place in a place of anger and unforgiveness, of resentment towards someone else and to the Lord, you got to deal with it. But dealing with it looks different if it's about something that's not even true. Okay, dealing with it looks different when it's about something that's not even true. I'm going to come back to that point. The other thing that prolongs our time in the wilderness is disobedience. Disobedience. The Israelites come to the edge of the promised land, and God tells them, we know this story, they send the spies in, right? The spies come back. They're like, it's awesome in there. Look at these grapes. Milk and honey is flowing everywhere, but there's a tiny problem. Well, maybe not a tiny problem. I mean, it's a pretty giant problem because there's giants. And two of the spies are like, yes, there's giants, and the Lord has promised this land to us. Let's go up and take it. And the other 10 are like, did you see the same giants I saw? Because I don't think we're taking those guys down. And the whole congregation goes on their side. And then they realize that they messed up, and they're like, okay, let's go now. But they've missed the window to be obedient. They've missed the window to be obedient. And as a result, a bunch of them die, and the rest of them go wandering. The wilderness wasn't a punishment until they disobeyed. Everything from the time they left to Egypt till the moment that they stood at the edge of the promised land for the first time was God's plan for them. And then they chose to step out of his plan. And so they wandered. And so they wandered. So that's what prolongs our time in the wilderness. Resentment and disobedience. So how do we be fruitful in the wilderness? Talked about what fruitfulness looked like. And kind of touched on this, but just making it clear. Abounding in the wilderness, or being fruitful in the wilderness, first requires a radical letting go of our preconceived notions about the past. That's tied to the resentment point I made. It requires a radical letting go of our preconceived notions about the past. Was the past season actually good, or was it bondage? And if it was good, do we believe that what the Lord has is better? Do we believe that he always leads us from glory to glory to glory? Do we believe that his promises are always yes and amen? Because if we refuse to see the past or the last season for what it truly is, we will never submit to the time in the wilderness as part of the kindness of God. Because at first, when they were delivered from Egypt, when Pharaoh let them go, they were rejoicing because they saw it as the kindness and the goodness of the Lord. And then it got hard and they got mad. But if they continue to anchor into the reality that what they had was bondage, what they had was not the goodness of the Lord, regardless of how much meat and fish there was. I don't even know if that's really even true, right? Like, I mean, if he's taking straw from their bricks, I'm not really sure how much, like, good food they really have. But sure, okay, maybe they do have meat and fish. They're also getting killed by the overseers. All the baby boys are also all getting killed because they don't want them to... She's putting her baby in a reed basket and sending it down the river going, this is better for you. I can't imagine how bad it would have to be for me to put Than at 2 years old or under in a basket and go, just giving you to the hands of the Lord because no matter what happens, baby, it's better than what I can give you. That is a dark place. That's where they were. And so regardless of what the wilderness looked like, it was better than that. Regardless, it was better than that. They had a pillar of fire in front of them. They were seeing the hands of the Lord show up in supernatural and miraculous ways. He was telling them where to go. They were hearing rumbles of thunder and lightnings and his voice in those rumbles and those thunders. They couldn't understand it. It was the Lord speaking. It was the Lord showing his power and his glory. They're seeing miracle after miracle after miracle. And they refuse to recognize it for the gift that it is because they are tied to an inaccurate perception of the past. And so sometimes our inaccurate perception is thinking that something was good, but it was really bondage, okay? And sometimes it actually was good. I don't want to say that every time we go out of a place that it was bad and it was evil, right? I'm not trying to say that. I think it happens more often than we think it does and more often than we want to believe it does, okay? But I'm not saying that. So maybe what you left really was good. Where you're going is better. Where you're going is better. I have a business friend and she says, this or something better when she's making a goal. She's like, it's going to be this or it's going to be something better. She's always surrendering it to the Lord, going, okay, this is where I think we're going, but I give it back to you, God. Maybe this isn't where we're going. If this isn't where we're going, I know it's something better than that. Because you do exceedingly abundantly beyond anything that I can ask or even imagine. So it's this or it's better. Right? So even if what was in the past was good, we're going better. Do you actually believe that? Because if you don't, you'll be angry in the wilderness. But as long as you see it as the invitation and the transition and the place of revelation that it is, because you know you're on a journey to a promise, you'll surrender to it. Which leads us to the second point. To abound or to be fruitful in the wilderness requires radical trust in God. It requires a continual affirmation that he is a good father, a good shepherd, that he is leading me through this because he is kind and because he is good. And where we are going is someplace better. Where we are going is a promised land. Where we are going is milk and honey. And if he takes me through the wilderness again after we get there, it's because we're going someplace even better. That it's glory to glory to glory to glory. And we don't have to be scared of the two in the middle. Glory to glory, right? We don't have to be scared of that transition point. Because we're always building something amazing. And I can always abound. And I can always be fruitful. Even though it looks different in the different seasons. And so for those of you who are in the wilderness today, for those of you who are in the wilderness, I just encourage you to see it as the invitation from the Lord that it is. Does it sometimes suck? Yes. Okay. Yeah. Do we get hungry? Do we get thirsty? Do we get tired? Do enemies pursue us? Yes. Does God supernaturally provide? Does God supernaturally deliver? Does God supernaturally lead and guide us? Yes. Yes, yes, yes. Our God is greater. Our God is stronger. Our God is higher than any other. And so we have no need to fear the momentary trials, the momentary afflictions, because what he is working in us is for eternal glory. Eternal glory. And so, Lord, we thank you. We thank you for every season of life that you have us in. We thank you for every season of life that you take us through. We thank you that you sovereignly guide us through wilderness to promised lands. We thank you that you tenderly and kindly lead us from glory to glory to glory, and from strength to strength to strength to strength. And so, Lord, if we're in the wilderness now, or if we're going into the season, Lord, I pray that you would give us deep, thick roots. Let us be like a tree planted, rooted and grounded in your love, rooted and grounded in the truth that you are good. Give us deep roots, God. Give us deep roots, so that when we come out of the season of the wilderness, we will be seen as ones who are leaning on our beloved. Help us to radically trust in you, God. Help us to see you as the good, kind Father you are. Open our eyes. In Jesus' name, amen. Amen.